Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
Mind you, I'm 8 years old, something like that. We got pulled over because the cops thought we stole the bikes across the street.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This is episode 184, a talk with Saba. Saba is a young rapper and producer from the west side of Chicago who has been making a huge impact with his latest album, Bucket List Project. Saba got his start at open mics around Chicago thrown by Young Chicago Authors and U Media, a scene that also produced talents like Mick Jenkins, Vic Mensa, No Name, and Chance the Rapper, and a scene nurtured by our friend and two-time Cypher guest, Young Chicago Author's artistic director, Kevin Koval. But Saba really came into his own with his 2014 album Comfort Zone, a project that saw him getting away from standard brags and boasts and developing a more personal and intimate style. Bucket List Project finds that style fully developed, and people have noticed. Rolling Stone chose the record as one of its top rap albums of the year, and Stereogum named it their album of the week. We sat down with Saba at Crosstown Studios in Harlem. As you'll hear, our conversation took place in November, the day before the presidential election, and not long after the Cubs finally won the World Series. If you're curious about any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit theciphershow.com to find a complete list and the show notes. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what we're up to, on the air and in the wider world. And now, here's someone who's always West Side bound, Saba. Saba, I gotta say, I tried really, really hard before this interview started to dig up some dirt on you. I asked your brother and Kevin Koval, and both of them had nothing bad. I tried really hard, though.
What's up, man? I try to keep good relationships with good people.
But yeah, Kevin has actually been a guest on the show a couple times now. So I wanted to kind of start by talking about YCA, about Young Chicago Authors, and the open mics and stuff that I know you started at when you were a teenager. Can you kind of give me an idea what those are, I guess, for people who don't know, and then how you first got into that scene?
All right. In Chicago, well, I guess they're in a bunch of places, but in Chicago specifically, there was two open mics that I went to. One was called Young Chicago Authors, and one was called U Media. And I got introduced to them by like one of my good friends who actually helped start the Pivot Gang, Fresh Waters. He used to go like every week pretty much, and when he started coming to the studio with me, he would be like telling me like, hey, there's a spot where, you know, you could like actually rap or, you know, perform, you know, little stuff. Like, it's not like a show, but it's like a good like building grounds, like, you know what I'm saying, like a rehearsal space almost even. But for us, they were just poetry open mics that we would go. And because like our raps were so like, I don't know, accessible, I guess, like it was like the, you know, a lot of the people that were in these poetry open mics to hear good poetry would, you know, clap and applaud and like become our fans, like even though we were doing something completely different. And then we started like actually performing like with, you know, aux cord, hook up the instrumental and everything. But that was really where like our first like, you know, experiences performing at all really like took place, and where we met everybody in the Chicago scene. Like, you know, being 16, 17 and at these places, it was just like a social event, but also like a positive thing for us especially, you know.
Mm-hmm. And who was, like, I know some names we would now recognize were kind of part of both of those events, right?
Yeah. Who did I meet there? I met Chance, No Name, Mick Jenkins, Lucky X, Alex Wiley, Kimbe, John Doe, even pretty much everybody in Chicago, like the scene, right? I guess Vic, just everybody, like all the Save Money and all of them. But yeah, I met them all, you know, at one or the other. If not Young Chicago, Authors, U Media. But most of them I met at U Media, actually.
Mm-hmm. And how did you all get along? I mean, you're all around the same age trying to do the same thing, which can go a couple different ways.
It was there wasn't really a get along. There wasn't like an anti thing. It was just kind of like we see each other and say, what's up.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, you know, we go on about our business. For me, I had like, I start building like different relationships with people because my, I was engineering, like I had a studio in my basement and I was recording a lot of people and producing a lot of people. So that was really where, like when I was 16, like I was also working on, you know, my own rap stuff, but it was mostly more low key. And when I was like meeting all of these people, like I was just talking to them about like my engineer work and my producer work. So I ended up, recording a lot of these people like early on just in my basement with no mention of like me being a rapper or anything like that, but just building relationships and stuff like that, and trying to just get my name out as a producer was really like, you know, when I was 16, that was really more my focus.
Mm-hmm.
And then it you know, I always knew that rap was really what I wanted to do, but it just wasn't, I don't know, I think just, you know, coming up to this new scene and around these new people where everybody raps,
mm-hmm.
it's like, it's way easier to be like, hey, I
make music.
I produce.
Yeah. Cool. So what was that studio that, you know, was in your basement, or I guess the basement of your grandmother's house, right?
Yeah.
What was that environment like? Why was it, you still record there sometimes?
Yeah, I still record. I record most of my stuff there still.
Wow.
I would say, I don't know, like that 2011, 2012 kind of time frame, like it was just a special place. Like it was, I don't know, like instant inspiration. We had one of those like super like gully basements, damn near sketchy with, you know, the posters like everywhere, like all of like hip hop legends, but like also like, there's a Taylor Swift poster. There's a lot of random posters that probably shouldn't be up there, but you know, that's the life we live, I guess.
Right.
It's mostly random, but I don't know. It's just one of those things where like people would always come. So like our basement was always cracking. Like,
protect your soul like thick socks. My wristwatch go tick tock. I tell them hoes to kick rocks. Fuck thirst traps. I pick locks and purse snatch the midnight marauder that break to the rock of Gibraltar. And probably end up as a martyr. We parlay with all the...
There was always somebody down there. And one thing that I can say is, like, we had our crew, the Pivot Gang, but also there was, like, people from, like, as far as Chicago crews, like, people from all of them in our basement, like, at the same time. So I think it was really, like, one of those places where we built our relationships and kind of, like, you know, there's old songs with, like, everybody who was down there on these random songs and stuff. So it was just a place to come and work, like, no matter, you know, who you were, like, if we were cool, then I, you know, our door was like one of those doors that was always open.
Nice. And you still have tapes of stuff from that era that no one's
absolutely
heard?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. I don't delete anything. There's a 2013, like, I lost a lot then.
Right, I read about that. Because
I dropped a hard drive, and I, you know, but anything that's not that year, I have covered.
Ouch. Yeah. Actually, that reminds me. So that was when you lost a version of Comfort Zone, right? Of the tape you released
that did
before
happen.
This one. What was that?
It was crazy. It was so simple. Like, I had one job, and I tripped. And I had my Mac in my hand. I had, do you know the orange Lacy? It's kind of mm-hmm. big. I had one of those, and I had a black Seagate that was like thin.
Mm-hmm.
And I dropped everything except the computer. Like, it was like, you know, it was like the spur of the moment, you had to choose. And I chose the computer because it's the most expensive.
Right.
And then I was like thinking, like, damn, I should have not chosen. But I ended up being able to recover. Like, the Lacy, I lost a little bit, but it was mostly recoverable. But the Seagate was done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, like, it was one of those, like, times where it was like I had gone maybe like 3 months without backing up. And those are the worst because it's like, it's the third month. I should back up now. Okay, lose everything.
Right.
But yeah, it was. It was weird, man. It was weird. But it ended up being like one of the better things that I think have happened, you know, for me.
Because Comfort Zone went through a bunch of incarnations, right? Before it ended up in the version people heard.
Yeah, yeah. Because even the before that, there was like a different version, which is funny. There's still like a YouTube video that I never took down that says like Saba Comfort Zone preview or something from 2011.
Picture me with success like I'm photo there. My lyrics over they breath like the ozone layer. Which means they can't breathe like oboe players. This is CPR. I'ma bring it to the light like CDR. I burn rap where your urns at. Tell them R-A-B-D squad.
And it's like a bunch of like random songs that have never come out. But that, yeah, it's, I don't know, you know, making a project is, it goes through those stages, I guess. And that was, there was at least like three versions of Comfort Zone, I think, before the final one.
Wow. You know, it's interesting that the whole idea of Comfort Zone, right? And one of the things the title plays on is this idea of, like you were talking about, you didn't necessarily advertise yourself as a rapper prior to that. And so it's kind of about the idea of you becoming comfortable with yourself as a rapper, as a person who speaks, right? As opposed to primarily a musician. Can you talk about that a little bit, about like this idea of moving past being shy, moving past being quiet, and how that's reflected in the album?
The quiet kid, he know his cause. Do he even have vocal cords? They wanted me to speak up more, and I took this shit overboard.
I was just super shy, like to the point where it was like working against me, like super shy, super quiet, really to myself, aside from like my friends, like people who actually knew me.
Yeah.
But like, you know, going to school and stuff like that, like I was just a completely different person. In Comfort Zone, like aside from being, you know, that mixtape was also like a thing that I knew I was way too to myself, and I wanted to get out of that. I wanted to get out of that comfort zone. And that's really what the concept behind that project for me really was. And I think, you know, Young Chicago Authors and U-Media and just having to speak, because I was going there and, you know, rapping. So it's like after you rap, you, I don't know, it's like you got to talk now because people are walking up to you. People that you don't know are talking to you about, you know, whatever the case. A lot of times it's like a congratulatory, like, hey, you did really good. I really liked it. But you got to just be able to open up. And I think for me, that was one thing that I can say that I learned around that same time frame when I was like going to the libraries and to Young Chicago Authors, is really like what kind of helped like toss the assist to Comfort Zone being what it was.
Yeah, I mean, there's that moment on the record towards the end when you say, I'm no longer a loner.
College scholarship from anonymous, getting 15 credits, then I drop some shit. I drop my songs more since dropping homework. Made some new friends, no longer a loner.
Right, and it really feels earned, I think, just because of how much you document that whole process.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot. Like, just post-graduation, I knew once I graduated high school, like, I wanted to work on that because, like, all through high school, I was, like, super quiet. And then I felt like after high school, I had been blessed with this opportunity to really do something, to really build something. And I knew that it was going to take me being comfortable with that and speaking up for myself before, you know, I could ever speak up for others. You know, I'm going to have to speak up for myself. So I think that's what Comfort Zone was for me.
Yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned high school. You started high school not only an entirely new neighborhood, one you didn't live in, but 2 years early at 12 years old.
Yeah.
What was that experience like?
My brother was a senior when I was a freshman. So a lot of like the people that I knew at the high school were also seniors.
So even more surreal because you're hanging out with all the 17, 18 year olds.
It was tight. That year was tight. It was just like, I don't know, a bunch of like, I don't know. I didn't really feel out of place because I always been like the kid hanging around my brother and stuff. It felt normal until, you know, you realize that you don't have any classes with any of these people. I had a study hall with one of my brother's friends, and that was like the only class that I had with anybody that I actually knew.
Right.
So it was, I don't know, it was tough just because I was so quiet, like unless I was around like these like seniors that I knew. But if I was around like the freshmen that were like actually my class, I was just super quiet, didn't know what to say to people, didn't really have anything to talk about. So yeah, it was super weird, but I don't know, like being 12, I think, I never really felt like I was 12 when I was 12, if that makes any sense. Like, it wasn't a thing that I thought about. It wasn't even a thing that I was really conscious of when I was, like, going to school.
Yeah. And so for Comfort Zone, I think one of the first songs that got people to really notice you was 401k.
Mm.
And there's this line on there where you say, you say, I was never street enough to grow up and be a thug.
But I was never street enough to grow up and be a thug because I went to school every day. I went to school every day, learn shit, don't matter, nigga, shoot every day. I had a 3.9, that shit didn't matter, what's a 401k?
And just something about the way you say it is, it's not simply a declaration. It's colored a little bit, maybe almost with regret or something in there. Can you talk a little bit about that line?
I think, I don't know, just being from where I'm from and living the life that I've lived is... I don't know. It's just really weird. It's just really weird. Like, I was a nerd. I've been a nerd my whole life. And I'm from, you know, that area in Chicago where it's one of the most, like, violent and stuff like that. And, you know, all of my friends from childhood kind of just grew up. We don't really talk or anything like that. And I kind of just walk clean past them now. And it's like at that point now where, like, all of them are, like, gang, like, have been taken over by the city. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's kind of like, I don't know, being able to witness that and know that, like, even if I wanted to do that, I couldn't. And I think that's what that line, you know, for me really was. Like, I was never street enough. Like, no matter how hard I could have tried, like, it wouldn't have worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so for people who aren't familiar with Chicago, you know, you're from Austin, mm-hmm. and sort of more broadly from the West Side.
Yeah.
And so how is the West Side different from other areas that people might know of Chicago, you know, South Side, North Side, you know, areas that people might have heard of?
I think there's way more similarities than differences. I think what is different and what's kind of weird to me is that the West Side has, I could be wrong, but I think statistically it's like the violence is like the highest in Austin.
Over the 30-day period ending December 30th, 2016, Austin was tied for second among all Chicago neighborhoods in homicides per 1,000 people, tied for sixth among all neighborhoods in robberies per 1,000 people, and tied for fourth among all neighborhoods in cases of battery per 1,000 people.
And a lot of the other, like, West Side neighborhoods, which is just super interesting to me because you always hear about the violence on the South Side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't know, I just felt like there was nobody speaking positively or even negatively about the West Side. Like, it's just like a forgotten about, like, area. Like, every other block is a bunch of abandoned buildings. You know, being on a bus, you walk, you drive past a bunch of it, and you're able to really see the just deconstruction of whole neighborhoods. And I think for me, being from the West Side meant trying to speak up or do something about that, like in a way that I could.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I think there's way more similarities to the point where, like, you always hear about the South Side violence.
Gang violence on the South Side is doing more than putting people in danger. It is also hurting hundreds of mom and pop stores.
Here in Chicago's South Side, where a 15-year-old girl who performed at the president's inauguration was gunned down earlier this month, the president has a problem.
Eyewitness News reporter Eric Hong has a live report from the Roseland neighborhood. Eric?
Alan, we're at the corner of 115th and Stewart. And neighbors say in the last month or so, at least three shootings have taken place steps from where I'm standing, the most recent one.
It's like, I want you to, at very least, if you don't know anything about the West Side, like, at least acknowledge that.
Yeah.
At least acknowledge that. Acknowledge something about it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's weird, man. Chicago's a very weird, amazing, but very weird place because of things like that.
And we're talking, you know, the day before the presidential election, an end to the election season.
Damn, that is today, isn't it?
Yeah. And so what has it been like as someone who is from Chicago to see that city kind of used as a political football, right? It this season has kind of been a stand-in for, like, gun violence.
Yeah.
And been, you know, thrown around, I think, by the Republican candidate, but certainly playfully, all sides,
almost,
I think.
Playfully, like almost jokingly, it feels like, look at Chicago. Like, you can't be the president because look at what, you know, like our city is the example of why you shouldn't be president.
Right.
Look at what's going on in Chicago. It's horrible.
Now Donald Trump tells Fox News when he was in Chicago, he met with an unnamed top cop with a plan.
But he said, Mr. Trump, I'd be able to stop it in 1 week. And I believed him 100%.
How? Did he tell you how he would be able to stop it in 1 week?
No, he wants to use tough police tactics.
By the way, what was once known in Chicago as tough police tactics led to an entire task force being shut down after it was found to have tortured 192 people, mostly black men, in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Although it's unclear whether or not Mr. Trump knows this.
And I don't know. I think it's terrible. Like, I don't know what else to say about it. And it's like, it's so often, like in every debate or something, like Chicago is coming up for all of these reasons that have nothing to do with the presidential, like, you know.
Yeah.
But really, it's like, I don't know. I think Chicago is just time to have that change, to have those positive influences, to have those figures. Because it's so, the violence in Chicago is not like, hey, I don't like you. Like, I wish it was that simple. Like, mm-hmm. Let's have a conversation. Let's get some coffee. Let's get a beer, and then we'll squash everything, you know?
Yeah.
But it's deep and, you know, and it's years and years and years of your people killing my people and my people killing your people. So it's like, that's not solved as easily as, here's a new president.
Right. Yeah.
Especially when, like, even in Chicago, it's like a thing that it seems to be ignored unless you're in like a neighborhood where people actually care. But like on the west side and on the south side, it's like people don't really care. So it's like there's nothing being done to even stop it.
Mm-hmm.
You can arrest everybody, but what, you know, yeah. what would that really do besides hurt their families even more?
Right.
So yeah, that's tough. And I wish I had the answers to stuff like that, ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, one more sort of thing about Chicago that you mention a lot is you use this image of that in your neighborhood, the buses stop running early.
Yeah.
'Cause you just wanna see outside, but the bus don't run, it's late at night. Hell out west though. Where the buses stopped running early. I used to run home. I was scared to walk.
Like, that's kind of a thing you keep coming back to. Why was that a particular factor, that particular image? Why did that kind of keep recurring in your songs?
I remember just being 17 and 18 and wanting to be out and going to wherever and having a leave. Like, the bus by my house stops at like 10:15.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, compared to all of these other neighborhoods where the buses run all night, it feels a way. It feels a way. Like, why our neighborhood? Like, why can't we have like an extra, even if it's like one every hour or something, like,
right,
you know, after 10. But just why is it that if I'm not where I have to be by 10, can I just not be anywhere?
Yeah.
You know, and even the train that's like near there stops at like 1 something, which is different from all of the other trains in Chicago that run all night.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know. It just makes you feel like, why is that a thing?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. To me, it feels like you're not really supposed to leave. Stay here is kind of what I took it as. That's kind of what it always has felt like to me. Like, and if you do leave, you know, you be back by it's like having a curfew almost by the, you know, not your parents, but the city.
Right.
The city's putting a curfew on you. So that's, you know, one of the reasons why I feel like it always comes up, just because I remember how petty it used to be. Like, if I'm somewhere and it's 10, I got to go home.
Right. Transportation as a whole is kind of a big theme, right? You have this idea of cars and different types of cars.
Mm.
Trains, buses, and like moving around the city and sort of the different ways you do that and what that reflects,
yeah,
kind of comes up again and again on that album.
Pull up in my bucket and I'm feeling like fuck it. Used to dream about it when my cousin had a cutlass. We were making ride with a new scent, chain like a new noose. Cop in the rear view, save all your 2 cents. Try and catch me like Mewtwo, they'll be happy to shave.
I might buy a trailer, we taking this bitch across the stage. All aboard, it's just like the green light, we finally off the train.
You know, it reminds me, you know, the thing you said about different neighborhoods, you have a line on it. The exact song is escaping me, but something about how you went to Wicker Park and you hadn't realized it was even there until you were, you know, a teenager.
Yeah.
Which seems incredible for someone growing up in the city.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like with most areas in Chicago, I was completely oblivious until, like, it was kind of like west side of Chicago, mm-hmm. downtown, and then the suburbs.
Right. Which is where you went to school.
Yeah, I knew about the suburbs because that was where I went to school. But with the exception of, like, the west side and downtown, I didn't know anything about Hyde Park or the South Side or Wicker Park even or Humble Park, like all of these like great areas in Chicago, even the North Side. Like I didn't know anything about it until I was like 17.
Wow, crazy. You know, Bucket List, the new project. One of the things about it that really grabbed me was just the title, the concept of it, the bucket list. That it sounds like there's kind of two sides of it. Right. There's this like happy, oh, these are my dreams. But then there's the sort of implied
you're
going to
die.
You're going to die. Yeah. Can you talk about that a little bit? The sort of the dual nature of, of bucket list and kind of that played into the album?
I think, the idea kind of spawned from two things. And one of them was my uncle's death. Mm-hmm. And that was a very, I think, dark time for me. Mm-hmm. But it was also a very, like, you know, when you lose someone and everybody is like, they're in a better place, you're going to be okay, like, life goes on. Like, you know, you're trying to find the positive, like, you're searching for the positive. And I think when I was working on Bucket List initially, it was that. It was me trying to find, like, I know it's there somewhere, where is it? But, yeah, it's exactly that dual nature, like that duality kind of is, I think, I feel to an extent that that's why I'm here, to represent that, like even past the Bucket List project, but just the neighborhood in Chicago where I'm from. It's the border of Chicago. Across the street is the suburbs, and it's the suburbs, like even one block in, like it's total opposite, you know, sides of a story. So I think for me, in working on Bucket List project, I take that same inspiration into, you know, working on the project and talk about the sadness and, you know, mourning death, but also celebration of life. And I think that's, you know, with everything, like there's two sides to everything.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned your uncle passing, and I know that was really hard. And one result of it was you hardly made any music for 2015.
Yeah.
What was the thing that kind of pulled you out of that and got you started creating this album?
I think I have a real good support system. I got, you know, between Pivot Gang and my parents, my grandparents, my friends aside, you know, in the city and everything. And even like on the internet, like, you know, like all of this kind of just led to a feeling of like just a higher self, like I'm here for, you know, a reason that is greater than being sad and in my room and working on these songs, because I was working on music, but I was so out of it, like on an inspiration standpoint, like that it was just hard to even follow through with any of the ideas that I was creating. And it's funny, like listening to them now, you know, it's almost 2017. I'll listen to some of the like 2015 roughs and they aren't bad. They aren't bad. But it was just, you know, being in that space, like if I'm making something and I'm like, I hate this, this sucks, this is terrible, why am I wasting my time? It's just hard to even like finish, you know? So I think, you know, listening now, and now that I'm not in that frame of mind, it just, I don't know, like a lot really changed in that 2015 year. And I think that was really like one of those years that was there to like separate the boys from the men, you know, like, are you about this or are you going to do something else with your life? I think that's for me what 2015 really was.
Yeah. One of the interesting things about the project to me is there's not a lot of the kind of traditional I'm the best MC boasting that is in, you know, so much hip hop and has kind of been a key element of it. from the beginning.
You know what's funny about that? That's when I was first like doing my like solo rap thing. That's what every song was.
I would say there's a lot of that on the Get Comfortable project.
Yeah.
This is my past on a record, and I reckon like a Western film. Like Lazarus, I resurrected rap. Clear, like resuscitation, bro, I brought it back to life. Cause I'm back with a vengeance, like Avengers. Payback from a young prince, nigga, hum this tune on the moon. Cause even on mute, you hear it. Lyrics reach out and touch your spirit like a poltergeist. How I approach the mic, yes, awfully nice. How to spot the right, I'm authority, so I authorize, I open. I
Which, you know, you did, what was that, 2013, something
that
like
was
that?
2011 slash. 2011? It came out 2012, matter of fact, 2012. Okay.
But yeah, there's a lot of it on that.
Yeah, and it's like I'm 18. Like what else is there to rap about besides being better at rapping than everybody else, you know?
Right.
But I think, you know, towards working on Comfort Zone and working on Bucket List Project, just trying to find myself, mm-hmm. really, it kind of in the process eliminated a lot of that. And I think, you know, just because I'm not like blatantly saying it doesn't mean it's not there, mm-hmm. but it's just I felt like I could carry that same message out in a different way. Like instead of me just telling you how many different ways I'm better than you, I could just rap this good ass verse and prove it to you in a different way. And I think that's for me, like, you know, as a rapper, that's how I'll choose to do it for now. And, you know, the occasional feature, it comes out. But on a lot of, like, my solo projects, like, I want them to stand and mean much more than just, I'm a dope rapper, real MC, stand up.
Totally. And, you know, on a couple of the songs, you mention Division Street, a big street in the city, and use its name kind of poetically. In a cool
way. Of the pessimism, trying to convince me that realism was a better vision. Never been accepted in the ghetto, but I'm on division, and I'm living. Austin division, ironic that that's the divide. Below the poverty line, my mother was on his outside. Z Money told me this line. I caught the bus off a pine. I say my word.
And I thought that was interesting, and I was hoping you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Division Street is, I guess, like the closest main street to my house. It's like, you know, it's the corner, basically. And what's interesting about Division Street, which I didn't even know until like 17, maybe, 16, 17, but like I always thought Division Street just meant the hood. Because that's, you know, by my house, that's what Division looks like. And then once I start going to Young Chicago Authors is on Division.
Mm-hmm. Just and way further down.
Way further east. And I'm like, whoa, like it's safe. This is a good neighborhood, you know? But for me on a lot of the songs, like when I mentioned Division, there's a line I said, Austin is the other street. It's like Austin and Division. Mm-hmm. Ironic that that's the divide. And that's really what it feels like, you know, being bordered off in this neighborhood. For me, you know, even growing up, like I was able to like still be able to kind of feel like that. The first time I said we're on the border. So the first time I went across the street to the Oak Park side, or maybe not the very first, but one of the first I went by myself. It was me and my cousin on our bicycles. We got pulled over because, and mind you, I'm like eight. Mind you, I'm 8 years old, something like that. We got pulled over because the cops thought we stole the bikes across the street. And I'm like, are you serious? First of all, my bike is fly as hell. And like, first and foremost, like, this is hard work right here.
Right.
Secondly, like, this is our first time over here. And then, it, I don't know, it's just a weird thing like that. Like, you know, like, you 8-year-old kids
so
are treated
sort of
like criminals.
You're not,
you know,
welcome.
Exactly. Like, even from that point, like, being that young. So I think for me, Division was one of those, like, just sides where you could see back to that duality, the two sides to every, you know, everything.
Yeah. Do you think about that stuff a lot when you're writing? You look at a name or a place or an object and kind of think about, does this have any poetic meanings, or was it just that Division in particular was evocative?
You know, I don't really know. I think when I'm writing a lot, and I'd be interested to hear about like a lot of other artists like writing process, but when I'm writing a lot, I feel like it's almost like subconscious, like a lot of the stuff that I'll say, like even making Comfort Zone, like, I didn't realize how many, like, West Side references were in it until, like, a friend from the South Side told me. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, stuff like that just kind of keeps coming back up. Like, even you saying the division, like, I said division, like, a few times on the project. Like, I remember saying it once, but I didn't really, like, think about it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think it's really interesting, like, in just how the brain works and connects things. But I think writing is one of those ways, because you're really, like, trying to just connect stuff for, like, hella lines. But it's all connected, and that I really couldn't even, I don't even have the answer to that one.
Yeah. And I mean, that's another thing that pops up a lot on this record is, like, biblical references, which I thought was interesting. There's, like, a bunch of them that kind of pop up.
On your mark, Joan of Arc, genocide, second time, Noah's Ark, now you're dead, no one's
a straight bullet will take your firstborn like the 10th plague. I'm the new pharaoh, my phone line forever open for prayer to fallen soldiers.
And so you're saying it's the same thing, like, sort of subconscious.
Yeah, I think that's hella interesting, because I don't know shit about the Bible.
That was going to be my question, was, like, where, you know, do you? And I guess, yeah, that's super interesting.
Nah, I think... I'm trying to think of one. I don't know. We might have to come back to that.
Yeah. and there was, you know, I know you went out to LA to finish this record. You know, it was captured in kind of a short documentary.
Being in Chicago, it's real easy to get trapped in Chicago. But just being outside of Chicago in any way, shape, or form, that alone is like growth, because it's like in us to not leave from birth. It's kind of like one of those things.
Had you been out to Los Angeles and Santa Cruz, that area, before going out to finish the record there?
Yeah, I had been to LA a few times, mostly like real quick, brief, like visits, then back home. Mm-hmm. And we stayed for like a month and some change this time. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely the longest that I had been away from home, period.
Wow. What was it like being out away for that long?
Fucking crazy. Can I say fucking?
Yes.
Is that a thing I can say? Okay. yeah, it was crazy. Like, it was, I don't know, it just felt like a test. Mm-hmm. Like a test. Like one of the Airbnb, like, first of all, it was very, like, just on a limb, like, fuck it, what do we have to lose? Let's go to LA. Mm-hmm. No Name was really the brains behind the LA thing. She was like really adamant about going, and I'm let's go. And then she like was at my house one day and just like had some bread and was like, all right, this is how much I'm about to put up to get the crib in LA. What do you have? Meanwhile, I'm just talking like, all right. And then I sent her like $1,000 and I'm like, oh shit, I guess I'm going to LA now. But yeah, it was crazy. It was like just being there, I really felt like we were tested. Like the first week we were in LA, it was me, No Name, and Felix, one of the producers that both of us worked with for Telephone and for Bucket List Project. Mm-hmm. But it was us three. We had like a decent Airbnb, but it was like after the first week, Felix left. He had to go back to Chicago to play a show. And we were doing great. Like, we were making, like, 2-3 songs even every day. And then he left and zero. I hadn't made anything. And then the Airbnb starts falling apart. Light fixtures start blowing up. Bugs are appearing from everywhere. And we're like, okay, we got to get out of here. We try to file a complaint. We ended up going to a different Airbnb. Did not get refunded anything. It was just rough. But like during that time, it was like, we can go back to Chicago right now because this Airbnb, like this house isn't working. Mm-hmm. We can go back to Chicago. Like Felix is there. We can say we tried, you know, we can make some music at my house. And No Name was really the one who was like, nah, we're going to stay out here and make it happen. And I was like damn near broke out there. Like I was like running on my last. So it was like, all right, well, you know, like as your friend, like whatever you say, I'm going to support that and we going to make it happen. Like, so what do you want to do? And when we had that option to go home or stay, we stayed. We ended up getting a different Airbnb, hella far from, like, it was in LA technically, but it was like border of I don't even know what.
Right.
So Felix comes back and Cam Obie's there.
It sound like Mississippi sippy cup. Baby turned Bibby up. Henny invented the catalyst for happiness in my cup.
Cameron Cam Obie Osteen is a producer affiliated with the Justice League. He's worked with Chance the Rapper, Lil Wayne, Vic Mensa, and more. He produced two songs on Bucket List Project and produced or co-produced 6 out of 10 songs on No Name's album Telephone.
And now we're really like in project mode, but it was really like, it was so many different like ups and downs. Like, and then, you know, just being away from Chicago, you are worried. There is a worry, like, you know, having friends back home, it's like, are they okay? Are they safe? I remember, like, it was like the last week before I was about to come home. Like, my cousin called me, and the reason why this shit was so crazy. There's a rapper from Chicago called Logan. His name is Logan. I worked with him a bunch, but he's like a really like great person. But last year they like shot up his car on the expressway.
It was June 12th last year. A couple of my homies, like, got shot. My homie got shot 5 times. My other bro got hit 3. And then I got shot. I got grazed in the back of the head. And that shit was crazy. Like, after that,
I don't remember if I was talking to No Name or Cam. I was talking to somebody in the house about this exact, like, scenario, because we were just talking about a bunch of like rappers in Chicago, and I'm like, yeah, I really fuck with Logan. Like, it's crazy that they tried to, you know, whatever happened on the expressway. And 2 seconds after that conversation, I get a call from my cousin on the expressway saying that he had just been like shot at like crazy. And it was just like shit like that happened like hella when we were in LA, like not as severe as that, but like that same kind of like, it just felt like a test. So the fact that, you know, he said he wasn't wearing a seatbelt, so he was able to duck the bullets. So this is that rare scenario when not wearing a seatbelt saves your life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Just LA was a trip. And then being in the studio, we had Red Bull gave us some studio time for like 3 or 4 days where we were just able to go in when they open and leave when they close, but just stay all day and just crank out records. But it was really a blessing. But like when we were out there, it like felt like hell.
I bet. Well, now you're in this position where, you know, Telephone and Bucket List kind of came out within a few weeks of each other.
Saba's Bucket List Project came out October 27th, 2016, while No Name's Telephone came out July 31st. As Saba relates, the two, along with producer Felix, sequestered themselves in Southern California with the help of Red Bull Music Academy to finish the two records in the summer of 2016. Saba's record is great and has garnered critical acclaim, while No Name's album reached even greater heights and finished the year on most notable album of the year lists. Not bad work for a month at the beach.
So now you're finally seeing the results of all this, or the world more properly is seeing the results of all that. What's that been like to see both those projects kind of come out?
It's pretty crazy. One, I met No Name when I was 16 years old, and that's when she was talking to me about Telephone. So that's one of the reasons why Telephone being out now, finally, to me, it's like, I feel like just a little bro who's like just ready to cry every time I listen to it. Like, man, this is, you know, all the hard work we put in, you know, like it really like it goes to show, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's somebody who was really dedicated to their craft and really making it happen. And with Bucket List, I feel like I was in a very similar like space, just creatively, like not really knowing what to do.
Yeah.
And then somehow doing something super creative, and it just kind of coming together like right before my eyes. And I don't know, it's like a surreal thing. Like I almost can't believe that Telephone and Bucket List are out, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, you said something once in an interview that I was so curious about. You said, you know, you're talking about acid rap.
I mean, I know I'm critical. My nitty bag, my kitty boots.
Acid Rap is Chance the Rapper's 2013 mixtape that was met with near universal critical acclaim and launched him to stardom.
And you said that kind of everyone in the city knew it was going to be big. before it was released. Yeah. And I was just curious how you knew that, because I remember a few days before it was released, you know, sitting in a room hearing the title track and being like, this is amazing, this is great, and knowing there was like a feeling about it, but not necessarily thinking it was going to kind of explode the way it did. I guess I was just curious what the environment was around that project before it came out.
Being at U Media, the open mic, and just seeing how Chance was embraced by everybody. Mm-hmm. It's like when 10 Day did what it did locally, it's like we expected it to do that. Like, at least I did. I mean, I wasn't really like close to Chance or anything when 10 Day was like happening.
Yeah.
I got suspended. Ooh, you got suspended for chiefing 100 blunts, 14, 400 minutes.
10 Day is Chance's debut mixtape released in 2012. The songs were initially written during a 10-day suspension Chance got in his senior year of high school for smoking weed.
But it's like, I was in Chicago, so I knew that it existed. Right. But it was just one of those things, like when acid rap was coming, like everybody in the city was talking about it. Everybody knew about it. Everybody, you know, it was the fan base, like even that young, like before acid rap, like I know, like now it's like people, you know, that's kind of what they know him for, like acid rap and like post acid rap. But like, this is like local right now, so it's like we all are aware of, you know, how big it has potential to be. And I don't know, it's just one of those things, like when we were at U Media, like it felt like we were like looking at that, like the selling out the stadiums and stuff like that, like right. It's not surprising to me, because I felt like when I was there that I was able to look at that. And not just for him, but for a lot of the other artists that were there, it's like, yes, you should be selling out a stadium. You should be selling out a show. You should be going on tour. You should be, you know, getting
helping to elect a president.
My name is Chance the Rapper. I'm from Chicago, Illinois, but actually, it doesn't really matter who I am. I'm here to celebrate.
Right. Yeah, but and that's just for like a lot of that Chicago, like early U Media like scene, like even aside from Chance, like I think some of the like best Chicago like music period hasn't even like popped yet. But yeah, I don't know, it's just one of those things, like being able to, like it felt like we were a part of like history when we were in that, like when we were going there, like it felt like we were doing some real historical shit. Even if we didn't know what it was or what it was going to be, it was like we kept going, and we knew that our minds were important. And it was just, I don't know, like I feel like the Renaissance phase of Chicago music right now, I think, started and was like honed in at like those two spaces.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. When it comes to your rapping, I know that the kind of Midwest double time thing that I think you first heard with Bone Thugs. It was kind of a big influence. But you always wearing a Bone Thugs and Harmony shirt right now. Can you, yeah, so I guess go into that for a second. This, you know, Bone Thugs / Twista kind of fast rapping double time thing, which you as a rapper you don't actually do that much of now.
Yeah, I could do it way more, but you know, sometimes it's best to just let your influences be influenced. Just try to find new ways to flip it, you know,
not like, try to chop all the time.
Yeah I think for me, like that's what got me into music. Again, it's not like necessarily why I do music. And I think that's why I'm not, you know, on every song.
Right.
But for me, just the cadences, like speeding up, slowing down, like the control, the sense of control, I think that's what really got me into rap specifically, because I was always into music. But hearing Bone Thugs and the melodies and, you know, just it didn't sound like anything I had ever heard. Even when like Twista and Bone was beefing and they, you stole my sound, like they were two completely different things to me, you know, as a listener.
Remember the killer, the lyrical beast, I'm gon' murder you, humping you like a hernia. The son, I'm just confirming you, nigga. If you get offended, they clearly be talking about you. Get off the bandwagon, nigga, just swinging on dicks and get your brand back.
I can sit, yeah. It was a pattern, a rhythm, a part of me, like a script shot. Throwing us from a longer tone, twist, stop. This dumb is not to be making it. But I don't know, it's really kind of crazy to see now, because like when I first started rapping, like that's all I would do, and I would have never thought that I would like not be doing that. But yeah, it got, I don't know, it got to a point where I had to find my own kind of identity. And I think that ability, I think it is a very important thing, because if you like average rap fan who, you know, like, he can really rap.
Right.
You know,
it equals like impressive.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, like when I was first, like to bring it back to the U Media and Young Chicago Authors, when I was first going there, I would do these raps where it starts off kind of like slower and just like way more like what I'm saying is important. Maybe get a ooh or I every now and then or something like that, snap or something. But then towards the middle, I would kind of gas a little more, you know, speed up. And then towards the end, just last four bars, just like. Wordplay, Avis, Scrabble, Babble, Kindness, Black Hole, Super Bad, Rap, Cycle, Fogo, Mogo, Money, Valley. Boy, like, no limit, Valley. Boy, y'all irrelevant, these are valid. Once, put me on the bullet team. Got a lack of bullet team. Probably never started winning. Riding like a bullet, sir, no fit. A crescendo effect.
Right.
So I think that was really like my first good verses had that crescendo, but learning how to kind of incorporate the double time and not just be a double time rapper for me was a really important thing.
Yeah. And I noticed one kind of flow that does work its way into the new album a few times is the like Memphis 3-6, or you know, now more associated with Migos, the kind of triplet. Hey,
Austin, my grandmama house. Hey, Madhouse on Madison, middle school graduate, could have been trafficking, but I would rather do better than my uncle had in my head to the sky like a Jazzy White backflip.
I would just probably credit that to Bone as well, or Crucial Conflict or something like. Like, you know, rap is like obviously super rhythmic. But it's almost like percussion-y, you know, like sounding like bass almost. So for me, just trying to find different pockets and cadences of, you know, places where it might not be the normal place to drop the rhyme, you know, stuff like that. Like I really focus on and I really pay attention to. And, you know, while the average rap fan might not care, it's something that I remember being young and caring the most about. So for me, like that cadence and just switching that cadence up, you know, every few bars or however many bars, like that's always something that I think will be important to me, because that's why I got into rap music in the first place. Right.
And that's, I think, most dramatic on GPS, where you very consciously switch styles every few bars there.
Yeah. Hey, where's your head, you necklace for a fucking necklace? Ooh, put that shit on record, bet they get the message. Just like after the beep, when my rap on my sleeve, when my heart on my tongue, where you think that I speak from his blood on my teeth. Like an op nigga, we oppose. I'm at the crib playing Neo Soul. Dropped out, I don't need a loan. This ain't school booking me up. You know, it's funny. GPS is one of the songs that got lost on that first hard drive.
Really?
Yeah. GPS. There was an early version of GPS. It was me and McJenkins. And it's gone forever now. But I like the new one a lot more. But it had the same idea. It wasn't executed on my end nearly as good. Like, you know, I think part of the difference between the early roughs of like Comfort Zone that got destroyed and the one that came out was just me learning to control my voice a little more. And I think you'll hear it even more so on Bucket List, like everything being intentional. Like I don't know. I think as an artist, I try to experiment a lot with my voice and what it actually sounds like. And I think, you know, having that control is something that I had to learn. Like, I think I was always a good writer and a good rapper or whatever, but that didn't make me a good recording artist. You know, like the actual songs could have been great songs, but that doesn't mean that they're right, you know? Yeah. And I think that was something that I had to learn. Like, what is the right take? Like, you know, do I punch in this line, even though I could get through it without punching in? Do I punch it in to make it sound better? You know, like stuff like that was all like a learning process for me. So I think with Bucket List is a real like reflection of that. But like Comfort Zone, like, you know, that early GPS version is bad. It's bad. It's the same song, same chorus and everything, but it's just learning, you know, finding myself in that, you know, finding my own pockets and stuff.
Yeah. and Pivot Gang, obviously your crew. How did you first kind of come together? The members you aren't actually related to. Like, how did the rest of everyone else come together?
All right.
Because it's your brother and your cousin, right?
Yeah. My brother and my cousin are in it. That young gentleman, mm-hmm. MF and Mello, who really, I probably met him before everybody. Damn near met him before I met my cousin. But yeah, he went to high school, like right out of high school. That's when my brother and Mello and, you know, a bunch of other people started coming to our house to record. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, you know, some fuck around raps. It wasn't nothing like serious, but it turned into something serious. And really what Pivot was like the emergence of like, it was like two crews basically coming together. Mm-hmm. So one of those crews was called The Rally. And that was my brother and Mello and myself. And I guess I'll say Walt, because Walt was more associated with us. Walt was my cousin. Mm-hmm. And then Fresh Waters had his crew. And it was him and his brother. We got Squeak. Kevo Sway, just a bunch of people from completely different walk of life, you know, like otherwise would have probably never bumped into each other. But yeah, I had met Fresh when I was 13. I met Mello when I was 13 as well. But yeah, I don't know. Really, it was just like it just felt like family, and it, you know, recording those early like songs before we were even called the Pivot Gang. It was a real family kind of thing. Like all of us would just be in the studio, kind of like how they are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There are 5 of us here right now. If a beat was playing and all 5 of us just grabbed a pencil and started, started writing. Like that was basically it. And doing that every day for a summer.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how Pivot Gang started. And then it got to a point where we was like, we might as well just be one thing instead of being 2 different crews because all of us on the same song or whatever. So yeah, that's the long story, semi-short.
Yeah, and you took your name from Friends and went from there.
Here we go, Pivot! 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 Pivot!
Shut up! Shut up! Shut up!
Yeah, yeah. That was also Joseph. Joseph was the brains behind the Pivot Gang name. Mm-hmm.
I actually wanted to talk about Joseph just for a second because I, you know, just kind of stumbled on his music yesterday, and he seems in some ways kind of like the eccentric, kind of funny member of the crew in the little bit of music I heard. Almost, yeah. I think Kevin kind of compared him to Cool Keith or something.
Word.
We don't celebrate Kwanzaa here. Uh-huh. White folk hate me like Obamacare. Earl Grey tea mixed with Lady Marmalade. Hotter like Osama bin Laden when I'm my mama age.
Can you talk about Joseph and his music for a minute?
I think when it comes to like Pivot Gang, it's not like one of those crews where everybody's kind of doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like when we're together, it makes sense that we're, you know, why we're together. But like, it's like you might listen to one of Joseph's songs and not even think to relate him to me. Not even like you have no idea that that's my brother unless somebody told you.
Right.
And I think for us, it's like, you know, everybody being themselves and everybody having that sense of individuality and not, you know, like thinking, oh, it's a group, so we have to all do the same thing, you know, like, yeah. Where your neo soul at? Like, but everybody being on, you know, their own wave. So Joseph is like, I don't even know how to say it, but exactly who he is on the record is who that man is in real life. He is a very interesting character. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is my older brother, but I don't know. I think Joseph, in my opinion, is a very special, like, talent. Like, I've never heard anybody in hip-hop ever do or piece together sentences like the things that he'll say. Like when he was performing at YCA and U Media and all of that, he couldn't even get through it like without people like just cheering super hard or laughing super hard because it's so crazy and unlike anything that you've heard.
Shake my ass like a rattlesnake. Back it up because I'm so fergalicious.
My name roll off the tongue like breast milk. And my skin soft as hell. Touch it. Ass out like Prince in the 80s. I got my eye on you, but you can't tell like Tracy McGrady.
You know, like it's like every line with Joseph, you got to stop.
Right. Yeah, I think I got literally one lyric into hearing a song and I stopped and tweeted about it. I was like, this is
yeah,
great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I seen the tweet. We don't celebrate Kwanzaa here. White folks hate me like Obamacare.
Yeah.
First line.
First line I heard.
First line of
the
song.
This guy is amazing. And one other Chicago artist I wanted to ask you about, because I met her even before I knew she was an artist, and then heard her music and was blown away, and that's John Doe. Right. What can you tell me about her?
John Doe is a very amazing person. John Doe's my cousin.
Oh.
I found that out when I was like 17.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that was really like... That had a lot to do with kind of my segue into like being in the Chicago music scene, I guess. Was just early work with John Doe, hanging around Fresh. Like, he introduced me to a lot of people or whatever, but it was really like working with her. Like, I recorded before she put out her first project. Again, you know how those first projects are, where there are a bunch of different versions of the first project.
Yeah.
There was one that was like demoed in my basement, but it was the same kind of process. Every day just being in my basement and me trying to like coach her through a lot, like, and that's just really like learning from each other and playing off each other. And I'm glad you asked me that, because that's somebody who people like never really, you know, acts about. But like my first song that I really put out that really got any love in like the Chicago scene and had anybody, you know, tweet about it or anything like that was with her.
Like Jimmy Jones, fill your cup up with juices, the leader of the new school, and y'all dudes too true.
Okay,
and
now we got something all of y'all want. I just like this time to propose a toast for my name.
And it was on Get Comfortable.
What tune was that?
It's because, see, the title was just weird. I don't, you know, I was fake deep when I was 18 and I don't really know what to even call it. It reads established in 1994.
Oh, okay.
Is what it will eventually, after you look at it enough times, that's what it'll that's what it'll try to say.
Gotcha.
But yeah, that was the, like before I knew Chance, he tweeted the video for that. But it was just, you know, I don't know, like just a bunch of young people from Chicago really, mm-hmm. you know, trying to make it happen. But yeah, my relationship with John Doe was like a really interesting one, because that was the, like at a point, like really one of the only people that I was working with, like just every day in my basement.
And what is the sort of intergenerational relationship between rappers like in Chicago, from your point of view? I ask you this because, you know, you have Twista on your latest project.
On my mama's side, but when they got the OG on me, homie, no way, we don't want nothing. Breaking atoms if we causing destruction. Making patterns if we causing eruptions.
Lupe does a voiceover, yeah. You know, skit.
Yo, 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 what up? It's Lupe Fiasco. And my bucket list has many things in it. One of them is, want to win the Nobel Prize for something.
Tree was on your previous project.
And even if we don't get rich about this bitch, we don't get ticks on Priceline quick enough to where they jump way, way up, and you can't afford the shit, and we still gonna do it.
So I was just curious about like the relationships between kind of the different generations of rappers and
yeah.
Chicago. And I assume like, you know, the people who are superstars maybe are on a different level and not in that conversation, but
I don't know. I think it's an interesting thing now, because I'm really like learning the answer to your question.
Mm-hmm.
I know, like, it seems like being from the West Side, like, I think, like, the West Side, like, stars, you know, kind of took a notice, like, early on, like, Lupe and Twista and even, like, Crucial Conflict.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's the scene is big, but it's small enough to where when you're making noise, like it'll get to who it needs to get to. And like, even, you know, like even like the people that are at the Young Chicago Authors and U Media now, like if they're making enough noise, it'll find its way to me and, you know, all of the like other like the newer like generation of MCs from Chicago, like it'll make its way to us because Chicago is like everybody kind of knows each other, like even though the city's so big. So I think it's one of those things now where like the it seems like the older generation of like Chicago MCs like really want us to win is what it feels like to me. Like even, you know, being able to reach out to Lupe and Twista, like they show nothing but support like since, you know, the first time we spoke. And Wild Style from Crucial Conflict came to my grandma's house, you know, like, wow. And was in the studio with us and telling us just about how much it reminded him of when Crucial Conflict first started. And, you know, for me, like, it's like, that's, I don't know, like, being from the West Side, like, Crucial Conflict, Lupe Fiasco, Twista, that was my list. Like, them them was the like, the golden, like, hip-hop guys to me. But, yeah, I think it's still small enough to where if you're in the city or if you're, you know, a part of that generation, like you'll eventually hear about it. So, you know, and when you hear about it, it's up to you, you know, whether you like it or not. Fortunately, it seemed like people liked me. So they reached out or followed me on Twitter or something like that. And, you know, just we've been able to build a relationship. And it definitely seems like we have their support, you know, and that's, I don't know, it's just a dope feeling because, like, Lupe was one of my favorite rappers of all time, damn near. And same with Twista and, you know, all of these other guys, you know, to have their support and in the corner and everything is just a dope feeling.
Nice. And so what do you have coming up now? You obviously just released Bucket List Project. What's coming up?
You know, now it's, I don't know, it's interesting because I really want to make more music now. Like, now it's like, I felt like I was just getting in a role and now it's like out now. So I'm trying to make a lot more music. But I mean, we'll be playing a bunch of shows and, you know, hopefully getting some visuals for Bucket List out and really just focusing on Bucket List and pushing this to as many different ears and, you know, trying to widen the audience as much as possible. But really, I don't know. I'll probably get back in the studio as soon as I get home, honestly.
And finally, I couldn't let a Chicago guy come by and not congratulate you on the Cubs.
Hey, I appreciate that. Yeah. Even though I watch no baseball, I got to take a little bit of pride in, you know, a victory is a victory, man.
Yeah. Were you in town for the parade or were you here?
You know, I was at a John Doe show.
Oh.
I was at a John Doe show in Chicago. I planned on them winning, so we left out a little bit early because it was going to get crazy. Because it was, like, on the north side of Chicago. So it's, like, it got really crazy over there. Like, the second, even before they won, like, I'm sure it was getting crazy. But I had to just get out the jam a little early to make sure that I could get home safely and not make a 20-minute ride turn into, like, a three-hour ride. You know?
Right. No one tried to tip your bus over on the way home. I saw that happen once. I used to live in Boston. They almost tipped a city bus over when the Red Sox either won or lost. I can't remember.
Look, I've only really been in Boston once. I mean, I've been a few times, but this, like, past weekend was my first real Boston experience. And just looking at how crazy those fans were going before, you know, anything really happened, like, I can see that. Like, Boston seems like they go hard.
Yeah.
It seems like.
The Super Bowl and World Series wins there were intense.
I bet.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on the Cubs. Congratulations on Bucket List. And
I appreciate
and
it, man.
By.
Thank you.
I've been an admirer of the whole Chicago scene that Saba comes from for several years now, but I somehow hadn't heard his music until I was preparing for this interview. It was a huge oversight, one I'm happy to have corrected. From Saba and Pivot Gang, to No Name, to John Doe, to Vic Mensa and Save Money, to Chance, Chicago's really giving fans who care about substantive and innovative hip-hop a bounty of riches. We've been able to document some of that scene, and hopefully we'll cover more of it in the future. Join us next week when our guest will be Dr. Dre of Yo MTV Raps fame. We'll talk to Dre about his time on the air, hanging with the Beastie Boys and Public Enemy, and even a little bit about that guy on the West Coast who bit his name. To make sure you hear each episode of The Cipher as soon as it comes out, subscribe on iTunes or your podcast app of choice. Once you do that, you'll be able to check out our back catalog. If you enjoy this show, for example, you should listen to Kevin Koval and Nate Marshall talk about their Breakbeat Poets anthology on episode 137. If you use iTunes, it's hugely important to give us a rating and a review. It helps bring more fans and attention to the show. Also consider helping us by becoming a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/thecyphershow and sign up. Bringing you a show every week takes a lot of time and effort from me and Josh, and we really need your support to continue to maintain this level of output. If even a quarter of our listeners contributed just $1 a month, it would go a long way towards making the show sustainable. As an added bonus for our patrons, we try monthly to share bonus material that sometimes comes out when talking to our guests after the main interview is over. Become a patron by January 31st to get access to February's bonus episode. If you want to talk to me or Josh about the show, visit us on social media. We're at The Cipher Show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found for free at thecyphershow.com. The Cipher is created and written by Sean Sotero.
Can I say fucking?
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
You're not really supposed to leave. Stay here.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
It was crazy. It was so simple. Like, I had one job and I tripped.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
I'm a dope rapper. Real MCs stand up.
Special thanks to new Patreon supporter Alex Benick.
Hey, I don't like you.
We'll see you next time around on The Cipher.
This looks really cool.